spoke 110 of the wheel. And this week we have on our Ask a Path Robin Corak, who's going to tell us more about her book about Demeter.
It's good to be back. I hope you've had a fabulous summer and are maybe taking things down a gear to lean into autumn. My September was filled with camping trips and camps. After 2 years of the largest summer pagan camps being cancelled due to COVID, it seems more special to be back under canvas and gathering around the hearth fires with old friends and new. Hazel and I started our camping season taking the youth group we volunteer with away, and there is something lovely about seeing young people slowing down, mucking in, learning to pitch a tent, and developing skills like doing backwards cooking. It's great to see them off their mobile phones and playing games in the dark, exploring the woods with their torches and moonlight to guide them. The second weekend away, we returned to the Mercian gathering, and the quality of the talks was again superb. The theme for this year was the climate emergency. The morning meetings explored how nature survives and adapts through mass extinction events that saw huge percentages of biodiversity lost, and how we are living amid a sixth mass extinction event, an event that is being driven by human activity. The closing ritual for the gathering was particularly powerful. We were all asked to go and research a species that has gone extinct, or a place that we knew that had been lost to development. We then created a mourning card, telling a little bit about the place or the creature, and then placing the card into the cauldron for rebirth and return. In between the opening and closing rituals were workshops. I went to one on Familiars by Catherine Jackson, Hospital Ministry by Dennis Wright, and Prison Chaplaincy by Wendy Shrubb. On the Saturday evening, we listened to Damn the Bard, and linking arms once again to sing Wild Mountain Time felt unbelievably good. I also got to give my first workshop. I talked about journeying for magic and well-being. I've been attending the Mercian Gathering for over 11 years now, only missing when the event has been postponed and the last 2 years of the lockdown. It's always felt a bit of a pilgrimage to me. I can also track my personal progression on my pagan path, from being an excited newcomer to getting to be an older hand with the opportunity to give something back to the event. And of course, many of our podcast guests have been speakers that we've seen at the Mercian. It's beautiful and a generous community to be a part of. And I had such a lovely hug off Susan Paramore, one of our perennial podcast guests. And I've been privileged to share this experience with several friends from Kent, and our group seems to grow larger each year. Hazel and I also got to spend the weekend with a special friend who had moved away during lockdown. Our final camp was Summer's Last Hurrah, organised by the lovely Care Keeley from Maidstone Pagans. And you really felt the season shift into autumn. This time of year, we're thinking about where we might need to rebalance our lives. COVID saw many of us experiencing levels of isolation and disconnection. And this podcast was born of a desire that we had to stay connected. Now that our lives and worlds have opened up again, Hazel and I have been thinking about how we would like to progress. And we've decided that we would like to continue the podcast, but rather than weekly, to make the podcast fortnightly, to allow us to pursue other projects and passions.
It was good to be back at the Mercian and to be able to take a friend for whom it was her first time there. She enjoyed it so much that she's returning next year. And like Jenny, I got a lovely hug from Susan Paramore. And each morning she, Sean and another lady gave us a great start to the day with their music. It was good to have a catch up with Ellen Sentier about rewilding and some of the issues that I'm working on. And hopefully we'll be doing some kind of collaboration in the future. It did also strike me that a lot of people didn't go to the talks or the meetings. Most of them did go to the music, certainly, and both the opening and closing ceremonies, but it seemed to me that for many it was just about being together again, a chance to relax amongst members of their community and to catch up with old friends, something we hadn't been able to do for 3 years. It also nourished people's spiritual needs. A friend of mine said that what was missing from other camps was, whilst lots of stalls are nice, they had missed the spiritual element. And this year I was at two autumn equinox ceremonies. The Obod Alban Elfed ceremony. Alban Elfed means the light of the water. And my coven's own ritual. One was rather formal and the other small and intimate. Both contain similar themes, that the equinox marks the beginning of autumn, a time of balance, celebrating the riches of harvest, and of preparing for the coming winter. And in both we gave thanks for the riches of the earth and for the riches of our lives. Both rituals gave space to feel the turn of the wheel in a year that has seemed to have gone so quickly. And I wanted to read you something from an article on the Obod website, written by Maria Ede Weaving, about balance, which of course we associate with the equinoxes. And she says, balance is often equated with stillness, and yet when I stand on one leg, I'm aware that in order to stay still and not topple, my body is going through a series of subtle muscles adjustments. This suggests to me that balance is actually quite active. We put effort into achieving that centred, rooted place. I think this is true for all areas where we seek equilibrium, right from our emotional selves to our health and working lives. We constantly have to adjust our balance to settle, and it's not hard to realise when we are off kilter. We feel it in the symptoms of unease, worry, illness and discord. But even these are not a problem, because such emotions and conditions communicate that it is time to adjust our footing and regain balance. The trick is to stay aware and keep actively engaged with the process. And Maria's been drawn to work with the Egyptian goddess Ma'at, and she says, what working with Ma'at has taught me is that we are each active participants in our own well-being, and that we have choices in our responses to life, and we are constantly guided back to that place of equilibrium if we listen to our intuition and act for our own highest good and the highest good of others. It is heartening to think that being out of balance contains its own lessons for growth and in itself holds the key to regaining our footing. Ma'at demands that we honour and engage with all the parts of ourselves and our lives, that we embrace and stay present in each phase of the cycle, always mindful of its relationship to the whole. In this season of the equinox, take time to reflect on your own balancing act. Honour all that you are, every experience. Take heed of any discomfort you might feel, and let it speak to you about how you can come back into alignment with yourself. In truth, balance is not total stillness. It's a dance. And this week on our Ask a Path segment, we're really lucky to have Robin Korak, who is an author, and she's got a book, Demeter, coming out next month, and a further book next year, Dream Magic, which is published by Llewellyn. Welcome to our show, Robin.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
So we like to start by asking our guest, could you tell us a little about your pagan path?
Sure. And I will say that, you know, for as long as I can remember, I've had an interest in paganism, but kind of danced around it until I was in my 30s. And going through a divorce and found that, you know, embracing a spiritual path was very helpful for me. So I'm pretty eclectic. I'm a polytheist. I have been trained in what's now a defunct tradition known as the Taijira tradition, and in the New Reformed Orthodox Order of the Golden Dawn with Nirut. But the one that I probably had the most extensive involvement in is Sisterhood of Avalon, the Avalonian tradition, which works primarily with the Welsh pantheon. But I've also done a lot of study on my own and incorporating things I've learned on my own. So, like I said, a very eclectic path, but one I hold very near and dear to my heart.
So, as I said at the start, your book on Demeter is published next month. Why do you think the myth of Demeter still resonates?
Demeter is very universal and very timeless. I think that anyone who has been a mother, who's had children, goes through that experience at some point where your children kind of find their own path, their own adulthood, and it can be a very difficult transition. It's a very, I think, weird time sometimes. So I think from that perspective of mothering and nurturing, and not just with children, but also with relationships, projects, jobs. But and from the standpoint of Persephone, her daughter, I think Persephone on the other side of it is it represents an experience that we all go through as children, where we're in that weird stage between childhood and adulthood, just that growth, and it's challenging, but it's very rewarding. And so I think on both sides of the equation, it's something that everyone, potentially goes through and can relate to.
So, could you tell us what we actually know about the mysteries?
Yeah, so there's not a lot that we know definitively because they were very secretive, but we know that they were very revered and treasured by the Athenians, and it was one of the few areas where there was equality. You could join whether you were, a noble or high in society, whether you're a man or woman, whether you were a slave. The only two conditions that prevented you from joining were if you had murdered somebody, or if you were considered a barbarian, and by that they meant you didn't speak the Greek language. We know that it really was about the story of Demeter and Persephone and that whole theme of birth and death and rebirth. And it took place at two different times. There was a what they called the lesser mysteries that people would go through, usually in spring. And you had to go through that before you went into the greater mysteries, which took place in the fall. And it's really the greater mysteries that I think most people know more about. And that is where the reenactment of the myth of Demeter and Persephone occurred. And what they've said is that people who went through this reported feeling so much more serene and so much more accepting of their mortality, that death was not a fearsome thing anymore. And so it was very powerful people. But it was also interesting because it was very secretive. And in fact, if you shared the secrets of what happened in the rites, you could face punishment, including exile or other things like that. So very, very important, I think, in the ancient Greek history, but in general, in terms of sacred rites and rituals.
Are there any theories as to why they were so secretive and also why they were so inclusive?
Yes, I don't know that there's many that I've seen many theories as to why they're inclusive. My own personal opinion is because, again, this experience of birth, death, and rebirth is something that everyone faces their mortality. Everyone goes through that cycle, and so they really applied to everyone. But it is very interesting because there are very few sacred rites that we know of where women were included, where there were men and women, and where slaves were included. And then the other question you asked was why were they so secretive? And I think part of it was because, and this is true, I think, with a lot of mysteries, to try and tell somebody what you experienced is very, very difficult, and you lose something in the translation. And I think people really felt like you needed to experience these mysteries. But I also think that there is something that adds to the rites and to the mysteries when they're not well known. And so I think that had a lot to do with it as well.
Could you explain what you mean by the term mother wound?
Yes. So I have to admit that there is a definite psychological term, mother wound. And what that typically refers to is the wounds that happen from being a child and not having sufficient mothering. And so in some cases it's a serious, it may be a situation where neglect occurs, but it also happens quite frequently where a child has a parent who is in the grips of mental health issues or chemical dependency and or even physical health issues. And so the child has to kind of take on the role as parent. And so they don't get the nurturing that they need as a child. For me personally, I see it as being a little bit more inclusive than that. I think that those are definitely things that come up. But I also think that there the opposite can happen too, where you have a parent who is very dominant, very enabling, and there's a lot of pressure to meet that parent's expectations and not necessarily an acceptance, an unconditional acceptance, or there may be some challenges in finding one's own way. So I think they're the mother wound to me is inclusive of more than just the standard psychological definition.
Demeter, I think, is very much seen as a goddess for mothers and motherhood. How can women who are not mothers and maybe never will be mothers work with Demeter as a deity?
I think, and that's one of the beautiful things I find about Demeter is she's not limited to people who are mothers in the technical sense of the term. I think she's really about creation, birth, death, and rebirth. They're not limited simply to life. I think that, you know, for me personally, there's been times where I've had loss when I've had invested a lot of time and energy into a project. Or I've had relationships that I invested a lot of time and energy to, and they don't work out. And so I think anything like that for someone, for a woman who isn't a mother to children, you still are putting mother energy into something in your life. You are still invoking that creative aspect. And so I think the themes are oftentimes transferable to that as well. And so it really, you could approach it more from a standpoint of creation and abundance and dealing with loss.
It seemed to me in reading the story of Demeter that in her grieving for Persephone, she seems much more human than a lot of gods. And I wondered, what can we learn from her grieving process? And of course, Hecate, who keeps her company.
Yeah, I think for me personally, one of the greatest things I learned from Demeter is about grief and dealing with loss and allowing ourselves to experience grief by in our own way and in our own time. Interestingly, at the time that I was writing this, we lost my niece who was 18. I was very close to her, and she had a rare medical condition similar to what I have. And it was a very unexpected loss due to a medical situation. And so just grieving that loss at the time I was writing this kind of made me turn even more to Demeter. And I think one of the things that happens a lot of times in society is that when we grieve, at first, you know, our society is typically very supportive, but there comes a point in time when people kind of, with the best of intentions, expect you to get back to normal, whatever that is. And I think Demeter teaches us that it's okay to grieve. It's okay to fall apart sometimes. I think the other thing too is she really teaches about personal power, because if you think about it, and boundaries, because if you think about it, you know, she brings all of the gods and goddesses to their knees. She basically says, I will not allow anything to grow until you give me what I want. And so very interesting aspect there. And Hecate is fascinating in this myth too. And I look at Hecate in terms of she performs a dual role in my mind. With Persephone, it is said that she becomes a companion of Persephone's, a pretty constant companion after Persephone's descends to Hades and ascends again and kind of claims her own life. And I think that that process leads to wisdom. And I think that Hecate is representative of that. But for Demeter, I think part of it, if you think about it, she says, I saw who took, or I know what happened to Persephone. I don't know who took her, but I will help you. But she's very quiet throughout. And I feel like Hecate is the lesson of holding space, just providing a just being there for somebody and not necessarily doing, but just being there with them and holding space for them. And so I think that. And that's also an aspect of wisdom as well, to not try to fix, but simply to hold space for someone.
In her role as the lawgiver, advocate, and warrior, how may people work with that aspect of Demeter? She seemed like a particularly good choice for people who are environmental activists.
Yeah, I don't honestly know how many people work with her in that capacity. I haven't run across anyone, but I'm sure there are. But that was one of the reasons I wanted to do this book too, is because she's much more multifaceted than people realize. I mean, certainly we all know her mother aspect, but a lot of people don't know about these other aspects. And so it's kind of my hope too that people will get to know her a little bit better and work with her in those ways. And you talked about the environmental piece. I think Demeter is a perfect choice. Because on the one hand, you've got, she is basically Mother Earth. She is, the abundance of the earth. And so, and also about protecting those she loves. So you've got that piece. But you've also got the social justice piece. So I think for people who are environmental activists, this is a perfect deity to work with and explore.
I wondered what you made of the fact that sometimes people are ambiguous about Persephone as to where she went willingly down to Hades or whether she was taken. And I wondered why there was that ambiguity.
Sure. Well, it's interesting because in the Homeric hymn, very much appears as though she has been abducted. But if you look at the Orphic hymn that tells a similar story, she goes willingly, maybe with a little trepidation, but she goes willingly. And when I was in Greece, and I was doing some, I went there to both for pleasure, but also to do some research. If you look a lot of the art, the statues, the sculptures, things like that, the paintings, Persephone, there are many reliefs, so to speak, where Persephone and Demeter and Hades are all sitting together and they're all smiling. There's a lot of art that indicates that maybe it wasn't such a dramatic, thing. Maybe Persephone chose. For me personally, I think that oftentimes the story reflects kind of a little bit of both, in the sense that, I see Persephone as wanting to explore this path and wanting to explore this potential relationship and claim her own, birthright or her own path. But at the same point in time, all she's ever known is the protection and love of her mother. And so it's kind of scary to move out of that. So I think there's a little bit of both, but I tend to view it more as she chose.
So, our final question that we always like to ask our guest is, if you have a book or books that were particularly significant for you about paganism.
Well, as it relates to Demeter and Persephone, I always encourage people, if you're interested in the deity, to try and find the source material. So the Homeric hymn and the Orphic hymn, to kind of get a bit different, perspective. There's a book on Demeter called Mysteries of Demeter by Jennifer Reif that goes into a lot of her rites. And then I think it's called Ancient Greek Religion by Walter Burkhardt, talks a lot about the Greek culture in general. But as I said, I also have a love of Welsh goddesses, and with the Avalonian tradition, Avalon Within is a great, great book for that as well. There's so many. I have so many books. It's hard to narrow it, but those are the ones I would recommend.
Great, thank you. Well, thank you so much for being our guest, Robin. It's been absolutely fascinating to hear about different aspects of Demeter. I personally didn't know, so thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And it's goodbye from me. Links are in the show notes to where you can find further information and ways to connect with Robin Corak. If you would like to discuss anything we've mentioned, hop on over to our Facebook page. Just search at The Wheel Podcast. As always, you can support the show by writing reviews, liking and following our Facebook page, or sharing this episode with someone you think will like it. As always, we would love to know how you celebrated the autumn equinox. Where in your life do you need a little more balance? And what is this season telling you to let go
And it's goodbye from me. Hope you're pleased to have us back, and we'll see you next week. Bye.